couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Cook.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening to Fat Guys at Lumen's.
Boom.
And this week we've got a great show for you, hopefully, maybe.
We do?
Sort of.
I don't know if we got a great show. We have a show.
We have two very highly anticipated movies, both of which are going to yield interesting discussions. We've got both M. Night Shyamalan's adaptation of the very, very, very beloved Nickelodeon cartoon, The Last Airbender.
And might likely be the very, very, very last Airbender.
Yes. And we've got the third film in the Twilight series, Eclipse.
Squeeze.
So it's all about abs and airbending this week. And glittery people. But first, I would like to point out that that if you read Fat Guys the Movies or Film School Rejects, this week is the week to watch Kevin Carr's weekly video segment.
That's true. I still have glitter all over me from this.
Yes, it'll be posted with both the Kevin Carr report card on Film School Rejects and probably just as its own thing on Fat Guys the Movies.
Yes,
and because apparently you had an arrow on your head.
Well, I drew the little avatar. Well, airbender. Let's not confuse people.
Yeah.
I drew the little airbender arrow on my head, or I had my wife do it, and I'd also put glitter all over my face because I wanted to be a sexy vampire. It was either that or show up without my shirt on.
Right, and I don't think they'd let you actually go on the air without your shirt on.
No, it was funny because the segment producer, when I came in, because I let her know I was going to do this. I just didn't want to show up like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, no, go ahead and do it. And when I showed up, she was like, she kind of had this look of like, what's that all about? And there was another guest that she was walking in, and it was hysterical. The woman who was with her immediately is like, oh, that's for Twilight. Just immediately knew the glittery face was for Twilight. Yeah, so
nice. So you can check that out over at fatguysthemovies.com or on the report card on Film School Rejects. You can also get a little bit more of Fat Guys of the Movies over on iTunes. We got a new iTunes review this week that is very awesome, and we're going to read that later in the show.
It's not from Scorn Dog.
It is definitely about how awesome I am.
Yeah, it's from your mom.
Yeah.
I let her out of the basement.
Probably. So you can go to iTunes, download us, subscribe to us, review us, just search Fat Guys the Movies. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com, or you can leave us a voicemail, area code 614-388-8735. I don't think we have any this week, right? I think we're good?
No, I didn't get any on my special super secret number.
So there's that. You can also follow us on Twitter. I am twitter.com/rejects. Kevin is twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Very unique.
You can get us on Facebook. Just search Fat Guys in the Movies. You can, I mean, whatever you need, we're there for you.
Well, not whatever you need.
Well, actually, I mean, in your case, whatever they need, you're pretty much there for them.
I'll do whatever. I'm a cheap date.
Yeah. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time to talk about movies.
I'm just stalling because I don't even want to talk about this movie.
Yes. Nice. Well, the first movie, the one that we're desperately trying to avoid, is The Last Airbender, in which M. Night Shyamalan brings the Nickelodeon cartoon Avatar: The Last Airbender to the big screen in mundane 3D.
You are the last of your kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation.
I knew you were real. I always knew you'd return.
We started a rebellion.
He will need you. And we all need him.
Okay, I'm just going to give my review. Just real my real quick review.
Mm-hmm.
Ready?
Yeah.
Poop.
Well, this is a very distinguished movie because it's the first movie of the year that I have reviewed for Film School Rejects and given an F. And I call it a hard F. If there was an F minus. Going into this movie, I was rather excited.
You can't go lower than zero.
You can't go lower than zero. You can multiply it however you want. It's still zero. But going into this movie, I will admit that I was excited because the trailers looked awesome. There was
pretty good,
some pretty cool action. And I love the production design. In fact, I've realized since I wrote my review that I should have mentioned how much I enjoyed the production design. You know, like, even down to the detail of the tattoo on the little kid, on Noah Ringer, who plays Aang, the Avatar.
The little white Inuit kid.
Yeah, the little white Inuit kid. But beyond that, everything else is a failure. This is the most well-rounded failure of the year so far, and I realized this very early on. And early, it feels like maybe Noah Ringer is not that good of an actor. You know, that
He's
was my weird initial looking. Impression.
He's weird looking.
Well, he looks like the cartoon character. You know, so I mean, it kind of works.
He's a kid that's bald. Noah's like his face sort of, you know, stretches out to his, you know, he does not look like, no. It's,
aside
it's,
from the way
he looks
weird.
Yeah. Oh, that's the least of its problems.
Yeah, that's the least
of its problems.
At first
kid.
I thought, this kid just can't act. But as more characters started to talk, I decided that M. Night Shyamalan just can't work with actors anymore.
No, he can't. Well, and the thing is, he doesn't direct actors.
Right.
Which is why, like, Bruce Willis, who will fall into his stock character. Mm-hmm. So when you had him in Unbreakable and The Sixth Sense, he just came up and was Bruce Willis. Same thing with Mel Gibson for Signs and Joaquin Phoenix. I mean, you had these good actors that you put into movies, and they just are like, well, I'll just do my thing. Which is why, like, when you take, like, and then you take actors who maybe they don't have, like, a thing that they do, or the thing that they do is sort of goofy, like mm-hmm. Mark Wahlberg in The Happening, which I loved. But I was the first to sit there and say the line deliveries were just god awful in that movie, and it kind of made it funny for me.
Right.
Not so
this movie is not funny. There's nothing funny about it. The dialogue is torturous. It is disastrously bad. And the pacing is terrible. The story, I've never seen a movie that felt so rushed yet so meandering at the same time. Because, you know, people familiar with...
I do not disagree with anything you've said so
people
far.
Familiar
this is the first.
With the cartoon will know that it's split up into three books. You know, so basically the premise is the Avatar comes back. It's this little kid, and he's got to learn. He's an airbender. Like, he can manipulate
air. He can control
air.
I can control
so
air,
he,
but it's
and
something
so
totally
he's
got
to learn how to manipulate the other elements, water, earth, and fire, in order to defeat the Fire Nation, which is this oppressive... force in the world. So, and it's split into three books: water, earth, fire. And so this movie is just water. It's just the first third of the story, and the story is really actually good, but this film seems to rush through all of its relationships to get a third of the way through the total story. It's the most insane thing I've ever seen.
What I noticed about this part, and we're going to have to go to a break here, and we'll talk more about it on the other side of the break.
Yeah.
But what I noticed about that is I went back and I watched some of the original TV show. And I'm like, this is a great little TV. This is a fantastic story. And what's funny, what struck me is going back and watching like the first couple episodes of the Airbender show, mm-hmm. I was like, it was very... Shyamalan, at the very least, he tried to do... tried to be very true to it, but he just failed at it. Yeah. I mean, he sort of like did the same shots, but they were just, there's no passion behind it. It was sort of like when Gus Van Sant remade Psycho. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had the same shots, you had the same overall structure, but it was just, you're just watching and like, my God, this is like watching a child direct something.
Yep. And we'll talk more about this after the break. I want to talk about that.
All right.
And we're back here on Fat Guys at the Movies, and I want to continue talking. It's interesting that we bring up the idea of how faithful it is, the movie is, to the cartoon series. And I think that's interesting because it is very, very much, in a way, beat for beat with the big story elements in that first season of the show.
It was almost alarming how close, I mean, even shot for shot... Mm-hmm. But it just was lacking any sort of charm.
It has all of the personality stripped away from it. Yeah. And what happens is they rush through so much of it that none of the emotional moments that happen in the last third of the movie make, you know, have any weight to them at all.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a relationship between, you know, the Avatar is found by this brother and sister, and there's a relationship that the brother develops with this princess from another tribe later in the movie, and there's this, they have this moment toward the end that is supposed to be this big emotional moment.
I fell asleep during that part.
The relationship is so glossed over, it's so rushed. And on top of that, you have nothing but exposition. Painful bouts of exposition.
Well, and for me it was even the biggest problem was just the it's sad when you have a cartoon that's basically, it's not anime, but it's sort of a nod to the anime style. And the voice acting on cartoons isn't always the best. You know, it tends to be stilted dialogue, but
really good in this cartoon series.
Well, it just works with the characters. And also there's certain things in terms of the animation that don't translate to live action in this version. Like when he like controls air and knocks people over, he just goes boom and then suddenly people fall over, whereas in this movie he like dances around and then sort of kicks up some dust, and it's just there's no magic there. It's really what it is. There's just no magic, and it's and for as cool as the movie looked, like you said, I mean, it looks beautiful.
Well, some of it, unless you're watching it through 3D glasses.
But the 3D there's no depth to the movie. There's like a shot in the beginning and like a shot at the end, and then like no depth whatsoever. And I'm like, wait, this wasn't even like a conversion. This was shot for 3D.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of like they forgot to give any sort of depth at all to it. So it was poop.
Yep. Absolutely sucks. It
sucks.
It is easily the worst movie I've seen, and I'm, as I mentioned in my review, I am offended on behalf of fans of the show. I had not watched the show until after I saw the movie. I came home and started watching the show.
Yeah,
the show is so much better, and they've stripped away everything that's interesting and charming about the show, and made a movie that says absolutely nothing, especially in 3D. The 3D, I can't even stress. Most of the time, the movie's not even in. Rendered in 3D, and when it is, it's worthless.
For as much as I defend 3D, and I even defended like Clash of the Titans, Clash of the Titans 3D is far and gone way better than this one. And I'll admit that wasn't the best 3D movie at all. Right. So yeah,
so
this one is
at all costs avoid. If you're a big fan and you want to
definitely
be very sad, go see this movie.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're moving on to a new movie to talk about, which is another interesting one to talk about in the Twilight Saga, Eclipse, in which there are humans and vampires and werewolves. Oh my.
We've been tracking the situation in Seattle for a while. Unexplained disappearances. Killings.
Someone's creating an army.
An army of vampires? They're coming here.
This means an ugly fight with lives lost. We're in. As long as we get to kill some vampires.
Do you want to take first crack at this?
Sure.
You've been kinder to the Twilight movies, haven't you? Because you thought the first one was as bad.
Well, I've reviewed the first two, and I thought that the first one was fan service and nothing more, and then the second one was pretty awful. And the third one, I will say this, the third one clearly is directed by a filmmaker who knows what they're doing. David Slade is a more technically precise and interesting filmmaker. Just the way the movie is shot is better, makes the movie more interesting than the two previous. Now, there's still a lot of the brooding, and the dialogue's terrible, and the characters still suck.
Yeah.
But I will say this, the action scenes in Eclipse are watchable. They're interesting, they're cool. And it's mostly because David Slade doesn't shoot all of his action from like 30 feet away.
Yeah.
For instance, you know, you have in the first two movies, you'd have a vampire running really fast through the woods.
Yeah.
And they'd shoot it from 20 feet away, and it would just look like this blur going through the woods, and it looked very cheesy and corny, and But the way David Slade shoots it is he brings it up very close. Maybe he only shows you, like, their feet, or maybe he shows you, like, a close-up of a tree and them going by. And it's that those subtle differences in it that make you that draw you into what's happening on screen.
But also with this is, like, when there's chasing they're vampires chasing another vampire in the early part that you're talking about, whereas in the first movie they were playing baseball really fast.
Right, and so I think the action is a lot better in this movie, and even some of the intimate scenes. He does this, one thing you'll notice about David Slade, if you've ever seen Hard Candy or his other movie, 30 Days of Night, is he's not afraid to bring you right into the conversation. Like, if two characters are having a conversation, the camera is right there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's, he creates this level of intimacy that I think Twilight fans won't even notice, but they will like.
Well, what's interesting,
the rest of us appreciate because it's better filmmaking.
What's interesting with the intimacy is there's a lot of intimacy with Edward and Bella, and I mean, that's awful. But there's actually a scene where it's a longer scene, and it gives Taylor Lautner and Robert Pattinson actually a chance to act off each other, and Bella's there, but she's asleep. And it's them talking, and it was funny because I can't stand Robert Pattinson. I think he looks like he's in a perpetual state of looking like he's going to puke. And I cannot stand Kristen Stewart in these movies. But what's interesting is when
Kristen Stewart and Robert Pattinson go to kiss, it looks like the most uncomfortable thing in the world for them.
It looks like, again, he looks like he's ready to puke. And she looks like he smells bad. And so, but when Lautner and Pattinson actually have a little bit of a discussion, I mean, it wasn't going like Brokeback Mountain or anything like that, but I mean, it was like they had this sort of...
That's a really good scene, I agree.
And I was like, suddenly I'm like, wow, I actually kind of like this guy. But when Pattinson does his sort of like brooding James Dean garbage, he falls apart. I just don't think that's not his forte. He's actually could be a decent actor. He's not a great actor, but he could be decent if he's not trying to be the brooding romantic lead.
Right, and I think this movie has a lot more of those moments, and... As I said, it's a watchable movie. It's much better than what we've seen before. It's strangely interesting. And, you know, aside from the fact that I already hate these characters, if this was the first Twilight movie, I might be a little bit more behind the entire franchise. Because it was such a relief to see Twilight actually get a movie as opposed to the two terrible, movies that it got before.
The first one, Twilight, was, I thought, just crap from beginning to end, because not just character and acting, but just technically, as a film, it looked bad, it was edited weird, it had terrible special effects, it had awful makeup. I mean, like community theater style makeup. The second movie was, from a technical perspective, was way better. But the first half was awful. The first half was it was excruciating to get through, because it was so, all the teen angst was just given to you in this giant morphine shot in the beginning. And it was also, while Chris Weiss was able to do certain things to a degree, there are parts that just completely got lost on the audience. One of them was when he, like in the first film, when she'd wake up screaming. It never made sense why she was doing that. I was talking to my wife, who's a big fan of the books, and she's like, oh, this is why. And she explains, well, it's because she's having these flashback nightmares, and Edward, with his sort of psychic powers, was able to kind of keep those at bay, and when he's not there, she's having these awful nightmares. I'm like, that totally didn't read in the movie. It looked like she was crying because he left. I mean, and she's like, oh, no, that's not why. And I'm like, and it's just that the director just couldn't make that leap on a couple things. And...
Right.
This one, at least, I felt that it was the most even. It made sense, and the angst was kind of spread throughout the movie. So there's a lot of it, but it's sort of this constant burn, as opposed to just being like, "Yeah, we're just going to take a half hour and put her in a room and have her whine and bitch and moan that Edward's not there."
Yeah.
You know? So,
so I think it's this is clearly the best of the three.
Oh yeah, and that's what I told the rep, and I actually, I mean, like. What I'm looking forward to, the day when this comes out on video and somebody goes in and edits out a lot of the crap that's redundant, and then we just get this like 45-minute awesome vampire werewolf battle movie. Then I'd be like, I'll watch the hell out of that.
So. All right, I'm saying Kind of Rocks on Twilight Eclipse. You could do a lot worse this weekend.
Yeah, I'm giving it Kind of Rocks because I think it works for the fans, but it's also watchable. Well, we'll go to break. I got a couple more things to say.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck. Oh yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. We were talking about Twilight, and this movie, I thought it. Just to kind of wrap up a couple thoughts on it, I thought it served its fan base well, and. There seems to be right now. It is just as popular to bash on the Twilight movies, unrestrained, as it is for the teenage girls to go to the theater and wet their seats,
right?
And the smarmy, creepy twi bombs to do that. We'll talk about that in a second. But this movie, if you see it outside of the hype and you see it outside of the fervor, it's not. Part of it is the hype and the fervor and the craziness going around it is a detriment to the movie. And it's one of these things, like, it's like if you liked the Beatles in the 60s, you're like, yeah, I like their music, I really dig it, I want to go see a concert, and then you go to a concert and you're just suddenly surrounded by screaming girls,
right?
You'd be like, okay, I hate this concert. But and it may make you hate the Beatles because of it, you know what I mean? And that's kind of how I felt with Twilight. I mean, my wife, who's a fan, we went to this screening. She was so pissed off at the people at the screen because people were screaming and yelling and being obnoxious and talking and giggling. And I'm like, and the problem is, and here's the problem with Twilight. There is literally no way to experience the movie outside of that until it comes out on video.
Yeah.
Because I went and saw on Wednesday, the day it opened, I went and saw Despicable Me was a screening we had at a local theater. And when that screening itself was not hard to get to, but you couldn't even park near the theater. It was so packed with cars because all these teenage girls and their creepy moms were going to see this movie. And it was just to get through this sea of people is so irritating that I think that for the average person, I mean, for the fan, it's part of the experience, but for the average person, it works against the movie.
Well, you know, I mean, it's the same thing for fanboys who went to see Grindhouse when it came out.
Oh, yeah.
That's an annoying situation, too, to be in that theater with people.
Yeah.
You know, it's screaming guys, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. And I defend the fans. I mean, you know,
let the fans have their thing, you know?
Yeah. The only part that I don't like about the fandom about it is I'll jump on this a little bit, is the whole Twi Mom aspect of it for two reasons. First of all, I don't understand the psychology behind the Twi Moms. I understand the whole thing of them having the teenage fantasy, reliving the teenage fantasy. But if you watch this movie from a parental, and the only reason I bring up parenting is because they're parents, they're Twi Moms, they're moms who read it with their daughters and love it.
Right.
And you sit here and be like, every step of the way, Bella is making bad decisions for herself.
Well, it's probably the most anti-feminist property I've seen in a long time.
Just anti-feminist, terrible. But it's like you have this 17, 18-year-old girl who's like, no, I need this stuff now, and I want this, and I want to make my life permanent, and I want to do this wicked change. Right. And what I thought was interesting about the movie is there's a section where she's talking to Rosalie, who's one of the vampires, and Rosalie's basically like, yeah, you don't even know what you want. You're being an impatient child, and you shouldn't be wanting this willingly. It's one thing if you're like the characters like Rosalie and
if you're dying and you're saved.
Well, and that's the thing with Edward, the character of Edward. He was dying of Spanish measles or something like
whatever.
That.
Something during the war.
Yeah, and he ends up becoming a vampire to save his life. But they're kind of there's this
none of them think it's a good idea for Bella to just do it because she wants to.
Because I want to do it now. Yeah, and that's the thing, I don't understand that. But even worse, because we were at the screening, and Taylor Lautner spends the entire movie, with the exception of two scenes, without a shirt on.
Which is fine.
And
Which is good for him. He worked hard to get those abs.
But here's the thing. When he shot this particular movie, he was 17. He's 18 now, true. But he was 17 when he made the movie. It's fine. If you got teenage girls who are going gaga over him and all that, I mean, fine. That's your thing. It's really freaking creepy to have a 45-year-old woman hooting and hollering over a 17-year-old kid in a very overtly sexual manner. And there's a friend of mine who I know on Facebook who I went to high school with. So she's my age. She's pushing 40. And she's got a teenage son. Mm-hmm. And I'd posted on Facebook, and my status was something like, hey, I hate to be a buzzkill, people, but remember, Taylor Lautner's only 17 in this movie. And she's like, so what? So what of it? And I'm like, I said, that's an interesting response from a parent of a teenager. And her response was, oh, well, my son doesn't look like Taylor Lautner. And he puts himself out there to flaunt it. I'm like, I get the fact he's attractive. I'm a dude and I find the guy attractive. Okay. I mean, this is nothing new, but at least attach a level of shame to it. Mm-hmm. It was like when the Britney Spears video Hit Me Baby One More Time or whatever it was came out in the mid-90s. I was like in my mid-20s. I was like 26 or whatever. And I remember when that video came out and she was 16 and she looked sizzling hot.
Right.
Every guy I knew was like, the ubiquitous response was, oh my God, she looks so incredible. I feel like a dirty old man. Everybody said mm-hmm. that. You don't get the same level of shame with the Twi mom. The Twi moms are ridiculous with this, right. And they have no shame. So I'm like,
it's a little disturbing. It's creepy. Let's agree on that. Definitely a little disturbing. And and my big problem is that it is the whole. And this is why I think Bella's I called her the dumbest character in the history of cinema. She is. It's clear what the right decision is. It's clear what. You know, that she's making a stupid decision, and it's so anti-feminist. I hate that. I mean, I'm not a big, like, whatever, feminist book beater, I guess. Mm. But
I don't even know what that means.
I'm not a Bible thumper. You know, I'm not a feminist, you know,
you don't thump
feminist
your Bible
thumper, I guess. But you know, to have this series that essentially teaches teenage girls that they should define themselves permanently by one man, you know, define themselves by their first love, you know, whatever, all those other virtues, you know, waiting till marriage, stuff like that, that's fine. You're going to see that all the time, but you know, teaching young girls, impressionable young girls, that they should define themselves by a man is bad.
Yeah.
And, well, that's a big problem with Twilight. So
here's an interesting statistic I saw, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of these when we do the box office in a sec. But I saw on Nikki Fink's blog, she had a number where she said they did a kind of exit polling of people who saw Twilight the opening day or Eclipse. And whereas they're like something like 60%, 60-some% saw it for the subject matter, and 20-some%, 30% saw it for the male actors. Only 15% of the audience polled, which is the fan base for this first day, were actually the main reason they saw it was for Bella, was for the female lead.
Right.
Which I thought, I'm like, that's actually kind of interesting because
it is
an
interesting thought.
That's the star. That's who it's about. That the entire universe revolves around this one person who really nobody cares about. All she does is she's a blank slate that the girls can then kind of just project themselves onto.
Right. And she's really blank in the movies. Kristen Stewart captures the blankness.
You know, for all the bloodsuckers in this movie, she's the one who brings the most suck to the role.
Oh, there you go. Being punny. Yes. Anyway, so I think we beat the hell out of Twilight.
Well, we got to talk a little bit more because we got to talk about box office.
Yeah, so let's talk about how much it's going to make, which I think is interesting. At time of recording, the movie's already made like $70 million, so there's just no way around that. Can I go back to last week first?
And then let's talk about last week. Yes.
Last week, Toy Story 3 won the weekend, $59 million. Grown Ups did very well, $40 million, and Night depressing. And Day fell a little short at $20 million. But that's $20 million just being the weekend. It actually made 27 because it opened on Wednesday.
But what's interesting about Night and Day is, well, Grown Ups did way better than they thought it would, but it just kind of got, no pun intended, eclipsed by Toy Story's continued run. But Night and Day, basically, the story I heard was it exceeded the low expectations.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, we weren't expecting much, and it did better, which still sucked, but, you know, it wasn't as awful.
Right. So, and when we move on to this week, I think it's a clear one. It's a clear two-horse race. You're going to have Twilight taking the box. I mean, at this point, it's whether or not Twilight will overtake Toy Story 3 and Iron Man 2's opening weekends, which it should.
It should.
And,
well, this is an interesting...
I think Last Airbender is an easy number two. And I think Last Airbender is going to make a decent amount of money.
It's going to make a lot of... It's going to make good money its first weekend, but it's... But both movies, Twilight or Eclipse and Airbender, whatever they make this weekend, they're not going to make more than twice that in its full run.
Fair enough.
Because that's what happened with New Moon. New Moon broke these records and made like $142 million in its opening.
And
four-day run.
It ended at 290 something.
Yeah, it was like almost twice the amount, which is still fantastic. I mean, it's a great number, but
yeah, $300 million. Well, plus it made like $1 billion overseas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and here's the thing: I saw the numbers. It turns out it made $30 million in the overnight. In the midnight and 3 a.m. showings, and it made
68.5
and a half. And again, I got this off of Nikki Fink's blog, and she was like, "Oh, it shattered the record from Transformers 2 last year for the best Wednesday opening, which is the best single day opening was New Moon. So it did not beat its predecessor, which I thought was interesting because everyone's off of school now, whereas the New Moon came out during the school week." Second of all, what I thought, and I don't even know what to assign to this, but I think it's kind of interesting to note that almost half its audience, like 30 million of its 68.5 million take, was in midnight and 3 a.m. shows.
Right.
Which, I mean, because it was just packed in the theaters. I was at the Easton. You know where that is. It's this big theater in Columbus. Mm-hmm. They had over 20 screens running it, and they were all sold out.
Right.
At midnight. So I think that's kind of interesting. I also think the whole shattered Transformers... The ticket prices, there was news stories that March or so, ticket prices went up like 5% on average for regular tickets, 10 to 20% on average for IMAX. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like a wash with Transformers too. In terms, if you not just adjust for inflation, but just adjust for the raised ticket prices that specifically happened. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a hit. It's a bona fide hit, but it has not exceeded... its predecessor, which I'm curious to see how front-loaded it's going to be over the whole weekend and in its entire run.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, it's going to have that very similar to Eclipse, and I think it'll, you know, it'll top out about $310 million overall. It'll be a $150 million opening full July 4th weekend.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole, and it's not just the Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And, but I think the more interesting, and that's pretty predictable. I think the Twilight movies, none of them are going to break out and be a $450 million movie. They're all going to be right around $300. Maybe the last one might get a little higher, but not that much higher.
Well, I'm curious to see because the other thing with the Twilight movies, it's only been like 18 months since the first one came out.
Right.
The first one came out a year and a half ago, and they waited a year to do the next one, and then they only waited like 6 or 7 months. They're waiting a year and a half to do the next movie.
Right.
So I'm curious
to see how it builds over time, or if it doesn't do it quite as well.
Or if it falls
off.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty straightforward. It's going to win the weekend. Last Airbender, though, is what interests me, because I want to say that this is like an $80 million opening, opening from Thursday to Monday, and... you know, it's funny, I made a comment going into Last Airbender screening. I said, wouldn't it be great to see $200 million opening movies? Mm. And then after the Last Airbender, I was like, I hope that doesn't happen. I hope this movie doesn't make $100 million in this opening weekend.
It's got a high awareness in the kids' market, and the kids are going to like it. I mean, my kids liked it. Cause,
oh, I'm sure, yeah.
I mean, it's based on
kids
the cartoon.
Don't have taste.
Well, I'm just curious to see. I just don't think it's going to – no parent's going to want to see this movie.
I don't think anyone's going to want to see this movie again. Even the kids aren't going to want to go see this movie again. I think that's the big problem with Last Airbender is it might open to $80 million this weekend.
It'll end at 150.
But it's going to end very shortly after that because it's going to have zero legs. It's at a 6% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
And usually, on the whole, critics are fairly generous to movies made for kids. You know, it should have gotten 40-50%. Even if it wasn't fresh, per se, it should have gotten a little bit higher. But this movie is so...
It's rockin' Jonah Hex numbers.
Yeah, this movie is so offensively bad that everyone wants to see it go down in flames. You know, bend. We want to be able to bend fire at it. But, you know, so I don't think it's going to have any legs. But I do think this. I think Toy Story is going to have another, you know, $30, $35 million weekend, even with less Airbender.
Toy Story will do well.
So, interesting stuff. Yeah. What else we got going on?
Fat Guy 5.
Oh, yeah, that thing.
Yeah.
We've been talking so much about the box office, I almost forgot. We got a great Fat Guy 5 this week. It's kind
did
of
you
a fun
want to
one.
Read? Did you want to read your iTunes review first?
Sure, I'll read the iTunes review. Let me,
real quick. We'll get that out of the way, because it's not...
Let me pull that up here. this review is titled, Both Hilarious and Insightful.
Oh.
And it's from Prime4Priz08. Mm-hmm. A little late on that one. But it says, Fat Guys, the movie is easily one of the top five podcasts on the internet right now. Between Neil's hysterical sarcasm and Kevin's insight and quick wit, I'll continue to listen to Fat Guys until the end. Hopefully that day never comes. Keep up the great work.
Yes.
That's right. Hilarious, hysterical sarcasm.
Wow. I don't think he said hilarious hysterical.
No, it's just hysterical. Hysterical sarcasm.
You're just adding to it.
Yep. So, I approve that message. The one last week was clearly from someone who was paid off by Kevin Carr.
Exactly.
And so, moving on to the Fat Guy 5 this week, this is kind of a fun one. We got five directors who could screw up a kid's show adaptation almost as bad as M. Night Shyamalan. And this is really all about... It's not about these directors being bad or about the fact that we never want to see any of these kids' shows turn into movies. It's the combination of the two that seems... It's just... You know, when you really think about it, M. Night Shyamalan was probably one of the worst people to direct a Last Airbender movie. Because when you watch the show, it's you know, it's got its serious moments, it's got a lot of action in it, but it's also kind of fun. There's nothing fun about anything M. Night Shyamalan does. That guy's not fun at all. So it's you know, worst possible scenario. And the first one is Tim Burton's Rugrats.
Yeah, because they're scary enough as it is. Imagine Tim Burton's bizarre.
I really think
Alice
Tim
in Wonderland
Burton doing directing anything that was light and intended for children really should be outlawed at this point.
Yeah. And speaking of light and intended for children, we've got Guillermo del Toro doing his version of SpongeBob SquarePants, which would be disturbing to say the least. I could have just imagined the Creature Shop to make Squidward and Patrick Starr and everything out there. And the next one, I'll give this one because he's one of my favorite crap directors, is Rennie Harlan's Power Rangers, because he does action really well, but just nothing else. And he's really gone downhill from like doing Cliffhanger and Die Hard 2 to directing John Cena in movies.
That and Who Really Wants to See a Power Rangers movie? Oh, yeah. Anyway, the next one is Paul Verhoeven's Hannah Montana. Because this would be the contemporary Showgirls.
Yes, this would be the sexed up, smarmy, taking drugs Hannah Montana doing
Although,
tricks on the street.
Can I just say
corner.
that might not be such a bad idea?
I have a feeling you'd be first in line.
It'd be kind of funny. I'm not. This has nothing to do with the Miley Cyrus's involvement.
Yeah,
it's just the idea of the Hannah Montana show, but her going off the deep end into drugs, sex, and rock and roll would be kind of funny in my mind. This is actually probably one of the only ones that I would approve of.
You're said like, no, this is actually a great idea. You know what's funny? On the Hannah Montana line, I was talking about my issues with Twymons to Chris and Dreyer Kramer, who's been on the show before.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the example. I said, look, if I stood up in the middle of the last song... Because Miley Cyrus is like 9 months younger than Taylor. She's almost the same age. I mean, she's within a year.
Right.
I said, if in the last song when Miley Cyrus shows up in a bikini because it takes place on the beach, if I stood up and was like, ooh, yeah, she's hot, I'm like, I would be so totally shunned from that theater. And Kristen's like, you so totally need to do that next time.
Mm-hmm.
So next time Miley Cyrus movie, I'm contractually obligated to hoot and holler at her in a bikini.
Okay, well, you let us know how that works out for you.
All right. Let's get to the last Fat Guy 5. I'll mention this because you don't know anything about
this one.
This
one, I have no idea what the show is.
This is Joel Schumacher doing his version of iCarly. Now, iCarly is a little show on Nickelodeon about a girl, and she's like 15, 16, who has a web show that's very popular. And it's a cute, it's actually my favorite of all the kids' shows. Of all the shows my kids watch, it's my favorite. It's a very funny show, very clever. But Joel Schumacher would just kind of bring his 8mm version of this web show, and we get something really, really disturbing that would not be for kids.
Okay, and with that, we're going to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap you up and send you out of here.
Bye.
And we are wrapping you up here on Fat Guys at the Movies. We have exhausted every possible time in Twilight.
Oh, yeah.
And so there's that. And now it's time for the world-famous DVD Roundup. So there's that, too. We'll start with my...
Sounds so excited about picks. This, though.
Yeah, you know, we've talked so much, and I've been so engaged in this show that I want it to be over now.
Yeah.
But we'll start with my DVD picks this week. Three of them.
Yes.
First is The Crazies, the remake.
The Crazies!
Easily one of the best remakes I've seen in a while.
It's a fantastic movie, actually.
Timothy Olyphant. It's a pretty good movie. Good, solid
it's
Blu-ray
crazy.
Release. Hot Tub Time Machine, which was also surprisingly funny.
Mm-hmm.
And The White Ribbon, which, if you can get it on Blu-ray, if you can rent it, it's really beautiful, beautifully shot film.
Yeah. Is it a foreign movie?
It is a foreign movie. Yeah, it's Michael Haneke's movie, and
him
just moved me beyond my hatred for Michael Haneke after Funny Games.
I hate that guy.
The White Ribbon's actually quite an interesting film, so check it out.
All right. Well, I'll move on. I'll do mine. I'll get rid of a couple of smaller ones. Eureka season 3.5. I love that show. There's also Creation with Paul Bettany playing.
Darwin.
Charles Darwin. It's got good performances, but it is one of those movies where they're just really, really trying to act. But, you know, hey, if you like Darwin. There's The Closer, season 5. Would you ever watch that show with Kira Sedgwick?
No.
It's actually, it's a neat police procedural. I mean, it's pretty intense, but still lighthearted. I mean, it's a good show. There's The Eclipse, which is not Eclipse, not Twilight, but The Eclipse, which is an Irish ghost story. Out on Blu-ray and DVD, and The Warlords, which stars Jet Li as in a sort of an epic Chinese battle sequence around American Civil War time, but it takes place in China. Actually, beautifully shot movie and very epic. There's also Percy Jackson and the Olympiads, The Lightning Thief. That's on DVD and Blu-ray. The Blu-ray's got a ton of stuff. Like, you know, all the special features, like 3 hours of special features, and it's got, like, these little, you can hook up to it with your iPhone and that sort of thing. And then I also got to give some love to Predator, the Ultimate Hunter Edition, on Blu-ray. Not the first time it hit Blu-ray, and the transfer's not fantastic. They do some, they process it, so it really doesn't, it doesn't give as good of a, it's better than DVD, but it kind of looks like when you put a DVD in your Blu-ray player and it kind of upgrades it. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what the image isn't as good, but it does have some neat special features, and it has a look at the new Predators movie coming out next week.
Well, hey, good for that.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm actually excited. I just got my Predator Blu-ray, and I'm excited to pop that in and see.
It's fun to watch.
Is the what? So
it's fun.
What's yeah, like our stinker you said, this week?
The stinkers is any of the Michael Jackson tributes, because it's been a year since he died. So if you were to go to Amazon and look at what, there's like about a half dozen, Michael Jackson's favorite, you know, songs, Michael Jackson's favorite videos, Michael Jackson's favorite children kind of videos. just any of these Michael Jackson tribute videos is a stinker.
Okay.
Yeah, I went there.
All right. Time for the review wrap up. Wow, we've got a lot of time left in this segment.
Yeah.
The Last Airbender, which, you know, I think it's interesting. This week we both saw both movies. That's right.
I know, we saw both. And you know what else? We pretty much agree down the line with everything.
Well, this is kind of an easy week because The Last Airbender gets completely sucks because it's an objectively bad movie.
I challenge
no matter how you feel going into this movie. It's just, it's bad.
I think, like, with Twilight Eclipse, you're going to get people being like, well, no, I hate it because I hate the Twilight things, and people just rage upon it. And then there'll be people who love it, love it, love it, who, you know, so you're going to have differing opinions. I really don't think there's much of a, there's not room for differing opinions with The Last Airbender.
I would like to see a very well-articulated defense of The Last Airbender.
Yeah.
I would read that, but I don't think anyone has it in them. I don't think anyone with a straight face and a sound mind.
Mm. I do know of at least one person who did like it, and she is a critic, and I don't hold it against her, but
I would.
It's probably anyway. Not the best opinion to have right now.
Anyway, and then you have Twilight Eclipse, which I said kind of rocks. Did you?
I said it kind of rocks too. Yeah, I mean, I was surprised at how much I tolerated the movie.
Well, and I think it's very clearly a more aptly directed film than the past two, and I think that makes a lot of the difference. You know, the action works. All the other crap doesn't, but the action works. So next we've got an interesting week. We've got Despicable Me and Predators. I'm probably not going to see Despicable Me out of protest for various off-air reasons,
which is a
but
shame.
But I am looking forward to seeing Predators. So we'll see how that goes. In the meantime, you can catch us over at fatguysinthemovies.com. You can get Kevin Carr's Weekly Report Card over on filmschoolrejects.com.
Woo-hoo.
The soon-to-be brand-new Film School Rejects.
Mm-hmm.
Very fancy, interesting stuff. You can also get Kevin Carr's Drinking Games over at Film School Rejects. We're very proud of those.
Yes. And we'll have one this weekend for the 4th of July.
Yeah, that should be fun. So we'll also have us on iTunes. Just go to iTunes, review us. As you've noticed, if you listen to us every week, we will read those reviews, no matter how bad they make it sound for me.
It'll happen.
So, in the meantime, go out and enjoy your weekend with vampires and airbender. Well, don't enjoy vampires.
Go have fun.